President Trump lifted sanctions on Turkey this week, saying Turkey had assured him it would halt fighting against the Kurds in Syria. But there are reports today of clashes between Turkish and Kurdish forces there. The fighting started after President Trump abruptly pulled American forces out of the border area earlier this month, saying it was time to bring U.S. troops home. Joining us in the studio to talk about this and other stories in the news is former Democratic Congresswoman Jane Harman. She's in town for a Harvard Law School reunion. She is president and CEO of the Wilson Center. Great to see you in person. Welcome.
Thank you, Jeremy. I wasn't sure you existed.
I'm a real person. I'm not just a disembodied voice. Let me ask you about Syria. Defense Secretary Mark Esper said today that the U.S. is going to keep a reduced military presence on the ground in Syria to stop ISIS from taking over oil fields there. There are reports the White House is considering keeping 500 troops in northeast Syria, which would be a reversal. Does the U.S. have a strategy there?
No. We seem to have a process-free foreign and security policy, which is very dangerous. We do have parts of government, including the National Security Council and the White House, led by a guy I just met this week, Robert O'Brien, who seems quite capable. And we do have a State Department, and we do have a Defense Department, and all of the principals and deputies should have been considering carefully what the day after and the day after that would look like if we took some of our troops out of Syria. I don't believe that happened. I think most people were blindsided by the decision, and now we're paying a price. I mean, what's happening here is that a plan that was underway to create a security zone between Turkey and Syria, which would take care of Turkey's worries about the Kurds invading Turkey, was just about to be put in place. And instead of that, we took the U.S. troops out of that part of Syria and destabilized all of Syria.
What are the long-term consequences for the United States?
Well, we'll find out.
But what are your concerns?
My concern is that we have destroyed our credibility. We also have created a vacuum filled already by, to some extent, the Turks, plus the Russians, and the Assad government, which has used chemical weapons on its people, has free rein. And, oh, by the way, there's a rumor that chemical weapons have been used during this exercise to remove the Kurds. It's not clear by whom.
By Turkey, you think?
By Turkey or a Turkish ally. Now, who could that be? Sounds like Assad to me, but it's being investigated by the UN, so I don't know. And if that's true, that is just heinous. And a consequence we might have anticipated if we'd had a reasonable process in place.
What about ISIS? How concerned are you that ISIS will now regroup and be a threat to the U.S. or Europe or the West in general?
Very concerned. I mean, there were prisons in that swath of land that Turkey has been attacking. There were prisons there of ISIS fighters. These prisons were horrendous. It is not clear yet who has escaped. But these ISIS fighters in that area probably came from Europe. And if they did, what will they want to do if they're free? They're going to want to go through the porous Turkish border and back into Europe and stage attacks in Europe and, you know, possibly through Europe to the U.S. So I think this has potentially set us back quite a lot.
Do you think that Turkey should be booted out of NATO as a result of what just happened?
Well, it's a decision for NATO to make. I mean, Turkey also did another no-no recently, which is to buy a massive air defense system called the S-400 from Russia. NATO exists as a collective defense organization to keep the West free. It doesn't exist as an attack, you know, outfit against Russia. But Russia is, I mean, given its actions in Ukraine and Crimea, a threat to NATO. And so now if you have a NATO member purchasing its major defense system from Russia, that's, let's say, awkward.
You're here with us today. Yesterday, you hosted, the Wilson Center hosted Vice President Mike Pence. He gave a speech which made news, and you interviewed him, and he criticized China's actions against protesters in Hong Kong. He called out the NBA, which has apologized for a tweet sent by the Houston Rockets general manager that supported the protesters and angered China. Listen to Mike Pence.
In siding with the Chinese Communist Party and silencing free speech, the NBA is acting like a wholly owned subsidiary of that authoritarian regime. A progressive corporate culture that willfully ignores the abuse of human rights is not progressive, it is repressive.
Jane Herman, what did you make of those comments? And I just before you answer, I want to read you what President Trump said. He's been very silent on the Hong Kong protesters, but this is what he said on August 1st. Somebody said that at some point they're going to want to stop that, they being China. But that's between Hong Kong and that's between China because Hong Kong is a part of China. They'll have to deal with that themselves. They don't need advice. Now the vice president is calling out the NBA for not standing up for the Hong Kong protesters.
Well, let me explain that Vice President Pence has spoken at the Wilson Center before. I served in Congress with him for five terms, so I know him reasonably well. He came back yesterday, and he picked the topic, not the Wilson Center. I thought the speech was interesting. It was hard-hitting in part, stuff we've all heard. The part on Hong Kong surprised me because President Trump has not said that.
But it's the part of the speech that made news. What else stood out to you in what he said yesterday?
You know, if you think the first part was hard power, the last part was soft power. He said, we have to coexist with China. President Xi and President Trump have a good relationship. And going forward, we have our differences, but we want to figure out how to work together. And I thought that was an important line as well.
The impeachment inquiry is on pause today in honor of the late Maryland Congressman Elijah Cummings, whose funeral has been going on today. First of all, just your thoughts on the legacy of Elijah Cummings.
Well, I knew Elijah quite well, and he was the North Star of the House. But the comment about Elijah Cummings is he was one of the rare people who still worked there who could have not just private but public friendships with somebody of a completely different set of views. And one of his friendships was with Mark Meadows, a co-founder of the Freedom Caucus. Mm-hmm. And live on TV during the contentious Kavanaugh hearings, Meadows got offended by something. And right then, Elijah, as chairman of the committee, said, now, Mark, I think you misunderstood this. It means something else. And you and I have been friends for years. Now let's just reason together about how to understand it. And boy, watching that just on TV, my heart opened to the fact that there still are a few people, sadly, another voice has been stilled, but a few people up there who are amenable to working out problems and misunderstandings.
But still a lot of differences right now, even between Mark Meadows and the Democrats on the issue of impeachment and this impeachment inquiry. What do you make of what we've seen, all these people coming in to be deposed, to testify on Capitol Hill?
Well, I think it remains to be seen what all the facts will show. But what do I make of it so far? I think it's been a responsible process. I don't like leaks, and I think it would be better if members of the committee maybe just dialed down a little bit the urge to be on TV on both sides. In the end, impeachment is a drastic remedy. I've seen two. One was the Nixon impeachment when I was a young counsel, as I mentioned. I did not have a direct role. The second was the Clinton impeachment, where I was a member of Congress and voted against the impeachment counts in the House because I didn't think they rose to a high crime and misdemeanor. And then, as you know, he was not convicted in the Senate. And in the end, he came out stronger. And so a lesson learned here is this remedy has to be used very carefully. But it only works if the country's behind it. And I do think there's an effort at this stage to see whether the country believes, understands what's going on and believes the facts. And we'll see. The polls are changing. The polls that I hear show at least 50% of the people that are polled think that the impeachment should proceed.
What number does that have to get up to for you to believe that the country is behind impeachment?
Well, it needs to get higher than 50. I don't know if we really agree on most anything, although it seems to me that there are a few issues that rise to high numbers, like the need to curb gun violence would be one. I wish we could address that in some civil way. Curb gun violence, not control and remove guns. Curb gun violence. I say that because that is something I think the country could agree on.
Okay, I want to ask you one more thing. We've been talking about the issues that are in the news right now. If we weren't talking about these things that we've been talking about, what would you say is the most important thing that America should be dealing with right now from a foreign policy perspective?
I think we should restore process to foreign policy. I think all the issues are hard. I think most of the issues are linked. For sure, North Korea didn't miss the movie when Trump pulled out of the agreement we had to contain Iran's nuclear weapons. And I'm sure that Kim Jong-un thought, oh, if I make an agreement with Trump, maybe he'll pull out of my agreement, too. So I think that set back, my view, our effort to deal with North Korea. If we'd had a process that worked, we might have connected those two things. That's an example. Pulling out of Syria, and oh, by the way, we're back to protect the oil fields, I think sent a message that's not just going to be heard or is being heard in the Middle East, but I think other countries are measuring Trump as well and trying to see, you know, how to gauge things. I think if there's more predictability in our foreign policy, even if the U.S. wants a smaller footprint in the world, something I'm not necessarily in agreement with, but even if the U.S. wants a smaller footprint, let's have it be decided on an organized basis with proper messaging and consideration for the day after and the day after the day after.
That's former Congresswoman Jane Harman, President and CEO of the Wilson Center, in our studios today. Thank you and have a great time at your Harvard Law School reunion.
Thank you, Jeremy. And for viewers who've never seen you, you look like a very nice man.
Thank you.